It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill and Marshall.
Good morning, and Bauer says hello, even though he hates having his ears cleaned out.
He does hate it, doesn't he?
Oh, boy, does he.
There's nothing better than acknowledging that certain animals hate certain things.
And he, you know what he does? He doesn't fight you. He lets you grab them and get a hold of them, but then he starts digging the nails in, and, you know, the more you clean, the deeper they dig.
He's good with his back nail.
Yeah, very good.
He can launch off that, you know, sort of get right. The leverage that he needs and mm-hmm. little flying skin, no problem. Before we get to the questions, I have a question for you that is a little more news related. And I don't know whether and how you've encountered it or if you've encountered it, but I saw something off, it was a CBS Philadelphia. And it talked about, you know, obviously there is an opioid situation in this country. And it talked specifically about how veterinary medicine, it was often unclear whether the pain management sent home with the vets was actually going to the pets, set home by the vets was actually going to the pets. How does that work?
All we can do is, you know, we don't typically dispense opioids very much, but they are needed for pain control. So, you know, in the last 20 years, thank goodness, we've emphasized pain control in animals. We used to, we used to lop off their horns with any kind of block or, you know, anesthesia. Analgesia, nothing like that. And we realized, I don't know why it took so long to realize that, you know, they do experience pain, even though they're not expressing it. They really experience pain, just like people do. Changes in heart rate, et cetera, show us that. And so, you know, we really have focused on, as a profession, focused on controlling pain in animals. And so we have all of these tools available to us and use them to help control pain. And there's no way that we can be certain that the animal's getting it unless we're doing good follow-up. And that means that you need to get the owner to do good follow-up. I would say that most people, because they are, the vast majority of people, because they're worried about their pet, are going to give the medication to the pet. But there are people out there who are, you know, shopping different veterinarians,
Tell. I mean, clearly,
there are usually pretty clear indications that's the case.
I know that somebody
we do need to report every pill that goes out of the office.
Okay.
Excuse me. So so what happens is it's reported to the state, and so if you're going to one doctor and getting tramadol, and then you're going to two different veterinarians and getting tramadol for your veterinarian, that's going to be a red flag immediately. It won't take long for that to show up.
Gotcha. Somebody once asked me, I think it was back with Labradoris, and, you know, a pretty extensive operation, and someone said, well, you know, you're not taking this, are you? And I happen to be, you know, probably the second to last person on earth who would anyway, but it was, what a question. Can you come help me with my dog and her heart stitches?
Well, that's a funny thing to ask, because people wouldn't necessarily.
It was totally random. I understand, but that's why it was sort of striking. Like, are you kidding?
Well, I have had a couple of people tell me that they're taking it, apologize and tell me they're taking their dog's medication, which is helpful. Then I can't dispense it anymore. But
at least you know.
At least I know.
That you've got to get something. All right. Thank you very much for that little foray into current events. And Alana from Saugerties, another current event. I have three young boys, ages 5, 7, and 9. They've been begging for hamsters for Christmas. Big surprise. All right. Another mom told me that hamsters can actually catch cold from a person. And as you can imagine, with three little boys in the house, someone has always got the sniffles. Do you have recommendations for a slightly hardier small pet? What about guinea pigs? Can they catch anything from humans? I don't want to be running to the vet every time one of the boys brings a cold home from school.
Hamsters can catch colds from people, and they're very tiny. And I think that with three boys of that age, a guinea pig would be a hardier pet. They're larger, and they can, you know, handle the handling a little bit better. That guinea pigs don't tend to, as far as I know, guinea pigs do not catch any upper respiratory infections from people. They can get all kinds of other issues, but they tend to be quite healthy pets. Hamsters do too. The problem I think with hamsters and kids is that if you've got one or two hamsters and you've got three kids and they want to be handled all the time, it can be tough on them. But a guinea pig is more reasonable size, I think, and they make a great pet. They're very sweet most of the time.
Do they need friends?
Pardon?
Do you need one guinea pig?
One guinea pig is okay. Two guinea pigs is even better.
Okay.
Two guinea pigs, pretty easy. If you're cleaning up after one, cleaning up after two is really about the same thing. So they're great. It's great for the kids to have a pet, of course, to learn all those responsibilities. I encourage parents to really make sure that they need to do the oversight, but they need to make sure, too, that their kids are doing the work.
Yeah, I think we were about these ages, 5, 7, and 9, going back in the time machine. I think that we were about that age when, with oversight, my brother got hamsters or something. I mean, they didn't do it for me. I wanted a dog from the moment that I decided I wasn't scared of them. So, that whole responsibility and having a living thing, to me now, especially as an antidote to, it's on a screen. It doesn't really.
It teaches so much that you can't even your finger on.
Yeah.
An adult needs to be looking at those little critters every day or two to make sure that there's nothing that they're missing. Because guinea pigs can get respiratory infections, and when they do, they need to go to the vet. They need to be treated. Because it's not as simple as a cold. So, but I can say that I had hamsters. I had many families of hamsters. I had budgies, dogs, cats, and it taught me a whole lot about just animal behavior.
Right. Well, yeah, because you have to see it too. And also, they're fun to watch.
To watch.
And interact with.
Yes.
They really are. So
they're entertaining.
So the long short is probably not hamsters. Guinea pigs are good. Does it matter if you have two or three? I mean, is there like guppy? Is there a guppy theory with guinea pigs, or are you okay?
You know, I think two guinea pigs is enough for most people with three kids, and they have so much to do taking care of the kids anyway, that a couple of guinea pigs, or even one, you know, if they're getting enough interaction with a person, then one is enough.
I would almost, this is just me, but I would almost, you've got three boys, get one guinea pig, and that
one
way
to
you're,
start.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that way you're not fighting over, you know, the
absolute. And get one from someone who's knowledgeable, you know, either someone local who raises some, or, a pet store is okay, but really you need to get a lot of, you want to make sure that you can call them with questions and go back with questions.
Good. All right, Elamin in Danbury. My Labradoodle bitch is pregnant for the first time. Does she need to be kept warmer than usual during the winter? For example, does she need a coat? If she gets wet in the snow, is that a problem?
The wonderful thing about dogs is they're only pregnant for about 63 days, and they don't need a lot of extra care. I would be careful of extremes in the last 3 weeks of pregnancy. But we're talking about a couple of months, and the first 4 weeks, probably doesn't need anything as long as she's on a good diet. So you want to make sure that you do a visit to your veterinarian and get some recommendations as far as diet and potentially supplements depending on what diet that she's on. Other than that, she shouldn't need any extra food even for the first month, and no extra care. She should be able to do whatever she usually does. And Then if in extreme temperatures, of course, if she's going to be outside for a lengthy period of time, then she would need a coat after that period, and then probably a little bit of extra food. But if she's going to be doing less and it's really cold out, she may or may not need extra food. Most depends on how many puppies she's carrying. So she's getting really big in her fifth and sixth week, she likely will need some food, and sometimes I'll put them on puppy food for the extra protein and fat. May not be necessary with the kinds of adult foods that we have on the market these days.
So, and do these adult foods all, have a pregnancy formula sometimes?
No, but we have we have adult dog foods now that are 35-36% protein. And, you know, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Oh, it wasn't even close. I just remember learning to look at those things and going, 9%? What's the rest?
You're right. So when I was first in practice, we used to feed puppy food to pregnant bitches from the time they were about 3 to 4 weeks old. We'd supplement with puppy food, but probably not necessary, but it has to be a conversation about a really good diet for her and all the calories that she needs, and set up a program where she's checked by a veterinarian.
All right, so long short, don't necessarily need a coat, but you do need a dietitian.
Absolutely.
All right. Caroline from Hudson, when my dog gets a lot of exercise on a really cold day, I always give her a couple of spoonfuls of extra food at clear meal times. I don't know what that means. It just makes common sense to me. But am I actually overfeeding her? Oh, okay. Extra food, obviously at mealtimes, not in between. But am I actually overfeeding her? Suki is 4.5 years old and a miniature Aussie Shepherd.
The Aussies are quite active dogs and will expend a little bit more energy on a really cold day if they're outside and running. So they tend to be able to stay out in the cold because they're very active and can stay out for several hours if you're staying out with them, or, you know, if they're supervised in the yard. So it warrants maybe a little tiny bit of extra food. A little bit of food has a lot of calories, and dogs don't burn a lot of extra calories in the cold. But it makes sense to me. I can't tell whether Suki's being overfed because it really depends on how she looks. So it is not a contraindicated thing to do. It kind of makes sense as long as Suki's not overweight already. You have to look at your dogs every few days and see and feel their rib cage. And if you can feel every rib, if you can feel those spinous processes on top that are protruding, then that at a 4.5-year-old, then that's a skinny dog and she needs to put on some weight. If you think she's perfect weight, then giving her a little extra food when she's outside and it's really cold out. We eat extra, too, you know, in the cold.
Yeah. For the last couple of weeks, two of my boys have just, my two boys have just been starving.
And they, you know, because I don't know if your dogs are, but they tend to be, my dogs certainly are more active when it's like this because they love to be nice and cool. Finally,
no, they're running around and they are hunting and eating all sorts of dreadfulness or stuff that I wouldn't put on a plate. But the fact is that I basically cannot move from my area in the kitchen without Shark looking at me like did you forget my 12th meal, and.
And the only reason that I even hesitate at all about getting a little extra food is because most of the dogs I see are already overweight. So if you don't think that she is, then giving her a little bit extra when she's been out for 2 or 3 hours on a very cold day is not a bad thing.
All right, and let's just take a second because many of the dogs that I see on the street, you know, it's lovely, but it's rather rare to see a svelte individual. And you really can tell the difference. So basically, you want to see a waist, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you want the chest to be lower, shall we say, than the stomach?
In most breeds, but not all.
Right, okay. So but it's something that, I don't know, even on TV, it seems like some of them are good, but some of them are just veering a little bit to the large side.
I have to say that with my patients that I see more and more normal weight dogs than I did. I would say 20 years ago, you know, there weren't any that were, almost none that were normal weight. But people are really paying attention to it now and keeping their dogs and on better diets, too, and keeping them well exercised and understand. There's just so much more good information out there.
Yeah, no, that is, I totally, and it's really interesting because you can be, sorry for this word, but basically you can be proactive about your animal's health rather than, you know, wait until something dreadful has happened and then the whole thing's a reaction. And that's, it's a completely different dynamic with working with them. And, you know, it's only an improvement in my view.
Absolutely. A well-educated client is my favorite.
Okay.
You know, having lots of questions.
And speaking of which, John Michael from Schenectady. Hard to say. There's a litter of puppies at my local shelter, and my family's going to choose one, but we'd like your advice. One of the puppies has blue eyes. None of the others do. They don't particularly look like huskies or any of those blue-eyed dogs. Actually, they look a lot more like a terrier dachshund mix. Anyway, our question is whether blue eyes are any more prone to health problems. So far, we like the blue-eyed puppy best, but we'd rather be safe than sorry.
Blue eyes can be a breed trait, as has been hinted at here. The Husky, the Australian Shepherd, and a few others. So that could be when we have a mixed breed dog, that certainly is a possibility of direct inheritance there. And then some dogs have blue eyes or partial blue eyes from the Merle gene. So Merle, some dogs are called Blue Merle. It's a sort of a mottled gray, white, black coat. You'll see that on Great Danes sometimes. Well, it's that Australian Shepherd, you know, typical.
Right, that look.
Beautiful, beautiful look. And if they have one Merle gene, for instance, the dachshund that comes in a blue Merle, so if they've got one Merle gene, they can have blue eyes and sometimes just, or partial blue eye. Same thing with the Great Danes. And there aren't necessarily any genetic problems associated with that. If they have two Merle genes, then typically they'll have the Merle coat because it's a recessive gene. And so if it's a Merle-colored dog with blue eyes, then you want to be careful of blindness and deafness. Or if this is a dog who looks like they have albinism, so an albino dog as well. So it doesn't sound like this is the case with these puppies because, I guess I don't really know. They really haven't been described. It sounds like, if I'm not correct, is it both eyes are blue or the question doesn't say?
It doesn't really say, but I think that both eyes, I get the idea that both eyes are blue, but that they look like a terrier dachshund mix. So if I were a guessing person, because I'm not a vet, so I'm allowed to guess, they basically probably have one Merle gene, and it sounds like it's okay.
So just assess. You should be able to assess right away whether the dog can see okay, the puppy can see. And it can be difficult to assess hearing in puppies, but you want to take that puppy away from the litter and into a quieter room and see if he or she can actually hear you. And if that's the case, then really nothing, I wouldn't be concerned about other health problems.
All right. And guess what? We are out of time. So thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files, Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.